Hi, I'm Sarit Vishnevsky, and you're listening to Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist, and this episode is to die for.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
Have you ever been one of those people that reads the last chapter of the book first?
Sometimes if it's like a really long book and it's like kind of dry, maybe taking a little too long, and I'm like, oh, just tell me what happens. Yeah, sometimes.
Like Torah?
I mean, we kind of do that, though, because we keep cycling through and like we just start over again at the end. It's like we kind of do that, sort of. Like you can start anywhere, I guess.
Totally fair. I think that makes sense. I mean, hey, hear me out. I know that it's been like a long fall and it's been an exciting one, but we actually have made it to the last chapter just as we're starting this new year. And so, what are we supposed to do with that? It feels kind of like a widow orphan situation in writing when you have like that one hanging sentence over the page.
I mean, I'm pretty psyched to finish up this book of Genesis, but also it's worth keeping in mind that Genesis really sets us up for Exodus, right? Like, we end Genesis with all of Israel in Egypt. Wonder what's going to happen next. Like, it's just setting us up for the next thing.
I never realized you could open an episode with a cliffhanger, but that was cool, so let's go. Happy New Year, everybody. We know that this might be a holiday that you're still experiencing, or we hope that you've had some rejuvenating time off, but we're here to bring you back a beautiful gift. We know, it's not Hanukkah anymore, but it is a new year, and we're so excited to kick it off with you. However, weirdly, we hadn't quite finished that book that we started in the last year, so guess what? We're here today. We're in the last parsha of Genesis. We're so excited. And we're going to wrap up our story of Joseph and Jacob and the brothers and the drama and the craziness. And it's going to be exciting and fun and also like a little bit, you know, tongue in cheek. Get ready, get excited. It's going to be a party. Well, maybe. Anyway, we do have an incredible guest today to help us navigate the difficulty with some parts of this portion. And so today, we are so excited to welcome Sarit Vishnevsky, who is the Executive Director of Kavod V'Nichlum, a nonprofit providing support, education, and resources for Jewish end-of-life. She trained as an end-of-life doula through INELDA, the International End-of-Life Doula Association, and produced a podcast, and a newsletter, so she's one up on us, called the B.Side Project, focused on where Judaism intersects with the end of life. Sarit has worked for a number of Jewish organizations that weave connections to ancient Jewish rituals and values through modern connection and understanding, including One Table, Repair the World, Present Tense, Dorot, and Hillel. Sarit is an alumna of the Wagner School for Public Service at NYU, MPA PNP 2012, and the Ruskay Institute for Jewish Professional Leadership in 2017. Sarit lives in Maplewood, New Jersey with her partner Ari and their 2-year-old daughter Adira. She is also a member of the Chevra Kedisha at Congregation Bethel in South Orange, New Jersey. Sarit, we are so excited to end this story with you, but also to get to learn with and from you today. Welcome to Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist.
Thank you so much for having me. Thrilled to be here.
It's our pleasure, and it's so much fun to be able to start off with a new friend. But I can't say that I could do this without my old friend, and so Gabe Snyder, co-host with the Comost, Happy New Year. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to 2023. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Happy 2023.
Can you believe we're here?
It's crazy. I still feel like we're in 2022.
I wonder why. But Gabe, it's okay. We have to move on. We have to move forward. So just in that line, I'm also thrilled to say hi to executive producer Edan Waldman. Are you stoked for this new year, Edan?
I am so stoked. It's really, as Gabe said, crazy. I genuinely cannot believe that it is 2023, partially because it's not. But it is, so can't believe it either way.
Cool. So for people playing along at home with Gabe and Edan making fun of me, when this drops, it will be 2023, but when we're recording it, it is still 2022. But here's the deal. We do know that every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end, and we're gonna find that out tonight on this episode. Let's get started. Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
You know, I wear my chai every day. I've actually worn it every day since I was 14 years old.
Nice. I have a similar thing with my Jewish star necklace.
Yeah. And so people ask me all the time, they go, why are you wearing a pie necklace? And I always have to say, like, that's really cute. Like, I love it. It's not a pie. It's actually a chai. It's the Hebrew word for life. And I was thinking about Genesis and this idea that Genesis really is this origin of life, right? Like, it's a life as we know it story. And as we go through this book, we keep on having these stories about lives well lived, about the lifestyles that people experience. And, you know, I thought about the fact that I think the Torah sometimes tries to trick us. And I was thinking back, way back to Chaye Sarah, which was definitely, you know, all about the life of Sarah, right?
Right, of course.
Except it wasn't.
Because that's what it's called.
Right, it wasn't. It was a trick. But I trust in Torah, and I believe wholeheartedly, Gabe, that that wouldn't happen again. And that for Vayechi, which means, and he lived, that clearly we're going to talk about somebody's life in this portion, right?
I mean, yeah, kinda.
Cool. So you're telling me it's going to be a happy ending, no problems?
Yeah. Anyway, while we might be starting a new year, we're still not quite finished with the book of Genesis, but don't worry, we're getting there. Well, actually, I guess we are there, because this is it, folks. Vayechi, the last parasha, in this book anyway. Jacob, aka Israel, is ironically settled in Egypt, living the good life based on his son's good friends in High Palace. Or, you know, something like that. We learn that Jacob lives his last 17 years in Egypt, living 147 years in total. Aware that his time in Egypt was coming to an end, Jacob makes Joseph swear that his bones will be taken back to Canaan. Joseph promises, and soon afterwards, he gets word that his father is ill. Approaching his father's deathbed, we're noting a pattern here, Jacob remains cunning and discerning until his last breath. Jacob swears to Joseph that God will make his family numerous, so he's going to go ahead and adopt Ephraim and Manasseh as his own. Who will notice, right? Jacob blesses his new sons, blessing the younger Ephraim with his dominant hand, because Ephraim will be greater than Manasseh. Nothing like forced sibling rivalry through your new father figure. Is this what they mean when they say there are problems with the patriarchy? Moving on. But wait, Jacob's not finished messing with his family's minds just yet. He also shows favoritism to Joseph one last time by giving him an extra portion, and then calls in the rest of the family for some last words, and man, some of them are just rough. Judging each son by their best and or worst qualities, he disgraces Reuben, curses, and then divides Simeon and Levi, gives sovereignty to Judah, sends Zebulun to the sea, makes Issachar a toiling serf, identifies Dan as a venomous ruler, and puts Gad in constant conflict, gives wealth to Asher, and has nothing great for Naphtali, lifts up Joseph in front of his brothers for one last hit at how they're all beneath him, and lastly names Benjamin as a warrior who justly divides the spoils. One last thing. Bury me in Hebron. Mic drop, Jacob out. Jacob is embalmed for 40 days, and then Joseph asks Pharaoh for some family leave to go bury his father. Pharaoh okays the time off, Joseph buries Jacob and brings his family and his Egyptian entourage along for the trip. Joseph's brothers, afraid that Joseph's patience has died with their father, fling themselves before him, but Joseph reassures them, saying, "Relax, we're good. It's good. Chill out." After becoming a great-grandfather, Joseph also asks to be buried in Canaan, but when he turns 110, he is buried and placed in a coffin in Egypt. Whoops. And that's what you get with Vayechi. Chazak, chazak, venit chazek.
That was pretty amazing, I have to say. And also, I'm pretty sure that whole the Jacob blessing last words to his son is like the precursor to Dayenu, the way you did it. So if I can get a copy of that to bring to my Seder next year, much appreciated.
Absolutely. I do need to give credit where credit is due and, you know, do some beshame om rowing. So that rundown was actually written by co-host with the co-most, Amanda Catherine Weiss. So thanks, Amanda. You've been doing a lot of writing recently and we really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Okay, Sarit, I have to say this just because I feel like it's always important that it feels like death has a stigma to it, that people are afraid of it, that people don't want to talk about it, that it's one of those things that we tend to avoid. And so I'm kind of thrilled a little bit that we are kicking off the new year just diving headfirst into this and saying like, all right, maybe it's scary, but also it's really important. And so I got to ask, what drove you to do this incredible work that you're doing, and what kind of inspires you to keep doing it and spreading the joy with others?
I love that. What a great question. And what a great way to kick off the new year, right? Do what scares you. I don't make resolutions, but if I did, that might be one of them. So I came into this work really out of a curiosity, and I don't know if it's more of a curiosity than what other people have about end of life. But I happened to, in my personal life, I was with both my grandparents around the time of their death, and I had worked with older people naturally at the end of their lives in different capacities for a long time. And I had a real interest in what it means to be supported by community and to not be alone at the time of death, which led me, while I was working a full-time job, it led me to train as an end-of-life doula. And if you're not familiar with end-of-life doulas, very similar to birth doula, but on the other end of the spectrum. And I wasn't able to become an end-of-life doula full-time. But I was really interested in the network and the learning, and I kind of took that with me. And it wasn't until after I had a child of my own that I really began to think about death, right? So, inhale and exhale, the two sides of one coin. And I really began to think about, what am I going to teach her? And how am I going to talk about it? Because we didn't really talk about it in my family. We didn't plan ahead. There weren't conversations. And so around that time, I decided to start exploring this intersection of Judaism and end of life. And I really thought I knew what Judaism did at end of life. I was convinced I had that down, like from the time of death on. And my curiosity was around dying. Like, what do we do to support the dying? And how do we support the people who are supporting the dying? And I ended up going in that direction. And along the way, found out I really didn't know much about what Judaism does at the end of life, because again, we don't talk about it. And it wasn't until like 2 years ago that I even learned really what a Chavur Kadisha does, that I learned what Tahara as a ritual is. And it just blew me away. I mean, first, it shocked and disappointed me that my gazillion years of Jewish schooling, yeshiva, and day school didn't help educate me on that front. But after I got over the shock and dismay, I was really drawn into the incredible power and the framework that Judaism provides around end of life. You know, I sat through the Anelda training in a room of seekers, of people who are looking for frameworks and how to provide meaning and support at end of life. And here Judaism has it. It exists in so many ways. And so really discovering these powerful rituals and these frameworks, I knew I needed to be part of it. It's ancient wisdom. It exists. It exists in the Parsha we're going to talk about. It's all hinted at. And it's just an incredible opportunity to engage and to support one another during life's difficult moments.
So recognizing that those of us on this Zoom call right now are two people currently in seminary, one person who's clergy adjacent, and one person who, you know, does this for a living. Could you just describe to the listeners what you're talking about when you say, you know, Chevra Kadisha? Those are, as you said, concepts that we don't really talk about outside of our, you know, kind of inner circles. You kind of don't need to know what they are until you need to know what they are. So what are these things?
Yeah. And I'm also here to advocate that we need to know what they are long before we need to know what they are, and we should know what they are. The Chevra Kadisha is the sacred society of individuals in a community who help care for the deceased and comfort the mourners after a death. Two primary rituals that they perform, especially in this country today, are the rituals of Shmirah and Tahara. Shmirah is the ritual of guarding the deceased, and Tahara is, we have a practice of, we don't leave a deceased person alone from the time of death until burial. And tahara is the ritual preparation of a deceased person for burial. It involves a ritual washing. We come in water and we go in water. And the last hands to touch our bodies are people in our community from a place of love and respect. And we're dressed in white tahrichim, in burial garments, and placed into the aron, into the casket. And those are the last hands to touch us.
So I've remarked on this podcast before that, in my opinion, Jews are really good at death. Not in the sense of like we're good at dying, but like in the sense of when we do have these conversations and when we do have these rituals, we do them really well. There's something incredibly beautiful about Shmira. There's something incredibly beautiful about the white shroud and the pine box and the placing earth on the grave and everybody coming together. There's something really wonderful about that. There are some really incredible rituals around periods of mourning. And it's interesting to me that when you talk about this end of life doula training that you have, that that wasn't a specifically Jewish training, that that's something that you experienced with people from, I would assume, across faith systems and even outside of faith systems. And so I'm curious as to how your experience within and without the Jewish community kind of informs your work today. Where do you see the connections there? You know, I'm reminded of Joseph and Jacob in this story, that Jacob was embalmed in Egypt in Egyptian practice and then brought over, and that Joseph was literally buried in Egypt, and we'll get back to him later, but there's a lot going on there with intercultural exchange. So I'm curious with that, where we've been talking about Jewish rituals, where the kind of extra Jewish stuff comes in.
I love the question. Well, I think there's a lot of different answers to this. I think, you know, so many different faith traditions and cultures have really careful rituals at end of life. We're not unique in that, but we are, I think, in some ways unique to the extent and to the amount that has been written about it in our texts and the way that we show up. And it's really a continuum of care in a lot of ways. Like, the Chevra Kedisha used to be there before death. And so the Chevra Kedisha, historically, if we go back to the 1600s, to one of the foundational texts, it's called Ma'avar Yavok. It was written in the 1600s in Modena, Italy. It was about starting from Bikur Cholim, from the time of an illness, all the way through preparing the deceased for burial, to actually digging the grave, to comforting the mourners, to giving the eulogy, right? Like the whole thing, the whole spectrum. And what I think was interesting and an interesting connection, we don't do that now as much in the United States. I think a lot of that has to do with like puritanical beliefs around death and death is dirty and outsourcing, right? We like outsource end of life and birth, right, to medical centers and to other people to handle for us. But the work of a doula really also follows an arc. And I think there's a lot of similarities if we think about these kinds of arcs and holistic holding of each other. Like, what are these ecosystems of care? Doulas typically, they're not necessarily performing certain rituals or certain religious rituals. It, you know, depends who you are, where you're coming from. But it's really thinking about continuum of care. So being there to support during a dying process, to supporting during the moments of death, which can be minutes to hours to days, to processing grief with families afterwards. And very similarly, Judaism has an arc. Right, like our foundational text, like in the Talmud, there's more written about death and mourning practices than any other life cycle event. And yet we focus so little on that these days. But it's there, right? And there's precedent. And I would argue, right, in the Parsha that we're talking about, there's a lot of that. And I didn't even touch on the Jacob. I mean, I think the embalming thing is fascinating, like the cross-cultural pieces. And there's a lot written about that. I don't know if other people, like if you have your own reference, but like, I mean, one is like, it's not the same embalming, right? We use the same word, that the chemicals that we use today didn't exist, we being the general we. But my favorite piece is there's a story, I don't know if it's a Hasidic story, but that like the most righteous people who died wouldn't decay, like their bodies would stay whole. And if the Egyptians saw that Jacob's body wasn't decomposing, they would like try to save him and worship him as a idol, as a god. And so they embalmed him, almost like mask that, so that there could be like a hidden a reason, right? Like that he's not decomposing, which I just think is a fascinating story.
So I can't necessarily speak to the embalming of it all, but I do want to say that I really appreciate your focus on presence during these meaningful moments of end-of-life care, especially in our Torah portion. This particular portion deals a lot with that, right? Like, Jacob knows that he's going to die. He knows that his time is coming to an end, and he really does set it up so that people are surrounding him on his deathbed in a very interesting kind of call back to Isaac's deathbed. You know, his statement is like, look, my eyes might be dim like my father's, but my brain is all there. I know what I'm saying. I know who you are. I know what's going on. And I've been thinking recently a lot, especially with the pandemic, but also, you know, even prior to the pandemic, you can't always be there in those moments. You can't always be present and physically there at the time of death. And so for people who might be feeling distanced or trying to find a connection but can't be in the space, what might people be able to do in those situations?
That's such a thoughtful question. You know, I think one core value or one core element of Jewish end-of-life practices is about showing up. You just show up and you do the best you can. Because the truth is, there's nothing, right, that we're going to ever be able to say or do that's going to heal, fix, make better. And in whatever ways we can, we show up, right? So whether that's just, you know, sending messages, text messages to a friend, letting them know that you're thinking about them, or a loved one, putting something in the mail, leaving voice memos, right? If you can't physically be there, letting someone know that you are thinking about them makes a huge difference, and not expecting an answer in return, not to put any pressure on someone else to respond, but just to put yourself out there, even if it feels awkward, even if it feels vulnerable, right? If we just close our eyes and we think about in those moments, like, when have we felt held? When have we felt cared for by people in our community, by the people that we love? What does it look like for someone to show up for me? It's really easy then to give that to somebody else.
You know, I'm thinking about this scene of Jacob blessing not only his sons, but also Joseph's sons, and this multi-generational thing. And it's also a callback to earlier generations. And I'm thinking about the physicality of it all. I'm thinking about this idea that Jacob is crossing his arms, right? He's got his right hand reaching over his left to bless the younger over the elder. And he is eventually surrounded by all of his sons. And there's a lot of physical stuff taking place, that this isn't just a mental exercise. This isn't just people talking. This isn't a, you know, rabbi blessing the congregation from the bima. This is a really intimate moment. And much like birth doulas, I would think that death doula, that being a death doula also deals with a lot of the physical, whether that's the like physical breakdown of the human body, or also physically holding somebody, physically being present. And so I think I have two questions about that. The first being, you know, how do we deal with this idea of physical presence in a time when perhaps it's not safe or accessible for everybody to be in the same place at the same time, whether because we now live very far apart from each other, families are separated by many miles, not just, you know, by a few roads, or also because of illness, or, you know, God willing, there are just too many people to fit in the room. How do we show up if we can't physically be there?
Yeah, it's, I think what you're touching on is the need for closeness, right? The need for being with each other to, you know, we hug, we hold hands, we put a hand on a body, right? We express our feelings and our comfort often through physical touch. But what it's also bringing to mind is kind of the ways in which I think where a lot of our practices and what we're reading in the Parsha, like where it stems from, is we used to be physically closer all the time, right? We used to exist in these really tight-knit small communities where we moved quickly. We were physically there all the time. Like The Chevra Kedisha, I think, is a great example, too, because often it gets conflated with secrecy when it shouldn't be secret. Privacy, yes, like privacy is the utmost, but it shouldn't be secret. Like the Chevra Kedisha used to walk in the front door, right? If there was a death in your town, the Chevra Kedisha would walk into the house and everyone knew who was in the Chevra Kedisha, and they would be there to provide support, to take care of the deceased, to begin the funeral process. Like that, you know, we were physically there. And now it's so different. And we really have to, in a lot of ways, work harder, I think, to show up, to physically be there when we're not used to it, right? Our communities, we live further apart from each other. We may need to travel longer distances. It might not be safe to be in those rooms. And so I think, you know, again, this idea of, you know, just finding the ways that we can show up and to infuse our presence into the moments to let people know that we're there is so important. And I think the work of the Chevra Kedisha, one of the reasons I think it's so holy and so sacred is because it allows us to physically show up in a way, I mean, very similar in some ways to Shiva too. You move your body, right? It requires us to physically move our bodies and to do physical work, to accomplish something for someone else and without thanks or gratitude. It is just incredibly meaningful because it brings that physicality that we often just don't have anymore because so much of how we operate, how we practice Judaism, we just don't have that as much, right? Like, yes, we might go to shul, but we go, we sit, we stand, we say words. But this is labor. There is movement, but it's labor from love. And it provides the connectedness both to the deceased, to the other people who are in the room with us performing this mitzvah, this amazing ritual, and hopefully to a higher spiritual power. There's just incredible physical and emotional connection in that.
You know, looking at Parashat Vayechi, I can't help but think this is our first real, like, deathbed scene. There's been a lot of death in Genesis, but we haven't really had a good look at somebody truly giving their last words. We've had Isaac giving a final blessing. But this is a different kind of deathbed scene. And so I'm curious, A, how this Torah portion speaks to you, but B, you know, what lessons do we as Jews learn? What blueprint do we get from this, you know, first deathbed?
Such a good question, Gabe. It's the deathbed, and then there's more too. So I learned this from a rabbi and a teacher of mine, but really what Jacob's doing in a lot of ways is it's the first time we're seeing advanced directives in the Torah. He's giving his wishes for after death, like, this is what I want you to do with my body. That's huge, right? Like, we don't see that before, and that is akin to an advanced directive. When I am sick and I can no longer make decisions for myself or at death, this is what I want to happen. And he's taking advantage of the time that he has to offer that, right? And that is really a blessing. That is a chesed to your family to not leave that decision to, you know, your 12 sons to fight over, right? To figure out, like, who's going to have to make this decision. He says, no, like, I'm very clear, like, this is what I want. And then you make sure everyone hears it, right? And that's so important. So we really see this kind of nod to advanced planning at the deathbed. We see the communal responsibility, right? The funeral procession in this parsha. So, you know, coming together, levaya, right? The Hebrew word for funeral means to accompany. There's literal accompaniment for Jacob, right? As he is being carried out by, I think, hundreds. I can't remember how it's phrased, but like hundreds of people. There's Egyptians and the family and everyone's with him and they're carrying him out. And that's there's a mitzvah of doing that, of showing up, right? The physical movement, again, the support. We get, like, I think our first taste of Shiva in this, right? You get Joseph sitting Shiva for 7 days after they get to the Machpelah. And then there's this whole piece about, like, legacy and memory and our stories that we tell. And, you know, I keep thinking about, whenever I read this parsha, like, may their memory be a blessing. And here you literally have Jacob, you know, talking about he's coming to the Machpelah with the bones, the memory of his family, our forefathers and foremothers, coming together, reminding people of what came before, the stories, giving blessing. And there's something just really powerful in that thread of saying, you know, this isn't just me in this moment. This is where I come from. And then later we've got Joseph saying, this is where we're going. And there's just this full arc. And it's not just a single moment in time, but it's part of a larger story.
Yeah, I know I made the joke before that every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. But there is something cyclical about death and birth. And the fact is, I'll be totally honest with you, with our listeners, I had actually never heard of an end-of-life doula, you know, and so it's really interesting that you would have things on both sides of the cycle, right? Like, it's a circle, and that just as we help ease people into the world, so too could we help people ease out of the world. And here, what I find so fascinating is, I'm curious how much of your work, like, similar to our Torah portion where Jacob speaks and people listen, right? There's no response. Nobody says anything back to him. He just talks, you know? And so I'm curious, it sounds like a lot of your work is akin to chaplaincy, right? Where you're accompanying people through this time of their lives and you are supporting them and listening and, you know, just being present, being there and holding hands. You know, instead of trying to speed it up or slow it down or make it different. And I want to thank you. It's not really a question, but I have to tell you, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing because I think that's so special.
That's really kind, Amanda. And to clarify, I don't practice as a death doula, but I do have the training. And what I think is really incredible about the training is that it really kind of prepared me to think in a really unique way for myself, just about the Jewish aspects to end of life. And I think what you just mentioned, by the way, is like for all of us, right? Like when I think about Shiva, right, that the practice of Shiva, when you go to visit someone who is in mourning, is you don't say anything, right? You do not speak. You do not ask a question of the person in mourning until they say something to you. But the premise is that we are there to bear witness, right? We're there to see each other and to comfort each other by just being there, whether that's on Zoom, whether that's in person. But it's about being there and just holding that space. And I think in so many ways, we're always worried about the words that we're going to say. We're worried about what our face is going to look like, when really all we're ever asked to do is to hold and to hear. And so I think this permission, right, to close our mouths, to not worry about our faces and just turn on our ears is really powerful, right? How many more of us would feel like, oh yeah, I can do that. I can listen, I can be there and allow someone else to be in these moments without, you know, any demands on how they should show up, to just fully allow someone to be human and to experience whatever they're experiencing. That's powerful. And that's in all of us, right? Like we all have that.
So I've always loved this idea about there being meaning in touch, you know, whether or not somebody is able to physically touch you back. When you touch something, you're able to feel two sensations, right? You're able to kind of feel what you're touching, and you're able to feel yourself in some ways being touched by the thing. And so I've always found that interesting, of just like trying to find the two sensations. So for our listeners, what I'll say is, if you were to, for instance, hold your own hands, there are actually two sensations that are happening there, right? There's the ability to feel your fingers on your hands, but you also feel maybe the cold, or you might feel the warmth, or you might feel a dry skin, or you might feel something that surprises you. And so I find those to be meaningful moments of communication, even after somebody has passed on, using touch as almost a language. And, you know, we asked this, but I'm really curious, Sarit, that if you had a message, if you had something that you really wanted to communicate to people who are listening in, who this might be daunting or even fearful to them, what would you want our listeners to know or be able to do after hearing your message? What would your message be as we head into 2023?
So, well, I have a vision, right, that there's going to be a movement, a resurgence of Chevrut Kedisha around the country, and more people will be engaged. I also acknowledge that not everyone is going to be interested in washing a dead body, and that's okay, or preparing someone for burial. There are so many parts of showing up at end of life that people can engage in. And what I hope people walk away is, one, with curiosity, right? Like, there are these incredible rituals and practices around Jewish end of life. What are they? To learn more about them. to be in conversation with family and friends about end of life at large. Don't wait till it's too late to have those conversations. We're blessed with time, like Jacob was. We can have those conversations. To think about what's in your community. How can you get involved? There are lots of chavrot and communities out there that are engaging in full ecosystems of care, where some people are sewing tachrichim and some people are helping set up a house for Shiva and making sure that there are meal trains, and other people are checking in with bereaved families and loved ones 3 months, 6 months, 9 months down the line. What exists in your community? Can you get involved with that? And then if nothing exists, what do you want there to exist? How do you want to show up in your Judaism to provide for your neighbors and your friends? We have this framework and we need to reconnect with it. So I hope folks are inspired to begin thinking about how do we complete a circle, begin life, end life, that it's not two separate circles and end of life is somewhere off to the side, but it's really the closing of one before something else begins. And we should do that with honor and care and respect.
According to Genesis, Reuben was the firstborn son of Jacob and Leah. However, he lost his status as the firstborn son and the right to receive his double portion of his father's inheritance due to a brief incident in which he slept with one of his father's concubines. Oops. So, despite this, Jacob still blesses Reuben, but also brings up some of the stuff he did that wasn't so good. So, you know, it's a bittersweet moment. So for that moment, we're proud to present a bittersweet cocktail, Reuben's Regret. Start by filling a cocktail shaker with ice. Add in 1.5 ounces of gin, followed by 1.5 ounces of orange juice for the zing of Jacob's blessings. 1/2 ounce of dry vermouth and 1/2 ounce of grenadine will round us out with a little bit of red. Shake well until combined and cold, and then strain into a chilled glass. Dash a few drops of orange bitters on top for the brothers' bitter tears. For a non-alcoholic version, shake together 1.5 ounces of pomegranate juice, 1.5 ounces of orange juice, and 1/2 ounce of grenadine syrup. Strain into your chilled glass and top with clubbed soda. For either drink, garnish with an orange wheel and enjoy. Chazak chazak v'nit chazek, and as always, l'chaim.
That sounds absolutely delightful, I have to say. Like, I would drink that and feel no regret. It also sounds kind of tropical.
It's like a weirdly happy drink. Like, it's bright, it's fruity, it's flavorful. But here's the thing, is that, like, you do get, in the alcoholic version, you get the bitters. You get that kind of sense of, like, wait, there's something a little bit different happening here. With the gin, you get that kind of, I don't know what to call it, but that kind of, like, almost soapy quality that gin has that can kind of make you think twice about it. That kind of makes you think, like, I'm not just drinking a smoothie here. Like, there's layers. And so I'm liking that. Layers.
It feels like a good theme for the drink.
Sarit and Gabe, I'm really thankful for the color commentary that you just gave with Midrashic Mixology. And I'm also a little saddened to say that we've already made it to our last segment, our thank yous and closing cues. This is a rough portion. It can be a little tricky in terms of closing it out strong. We're literally closing the chapter on this part of our story. And so Sarit, Gabe, Idan, what's one way that we can close chapters in our own lives gracefully and meaningfully? Sarit, we'll start with you.
Okay, I cannot pick one. I'm going to go for two. So one way is I really believe in the power of water, and not just because it's a very big piece of where I'm focusing now, and not just because we just had an incredible event with Mayim Chaim last week where we talked about Tevila and Tahara, immersion and the ritual of Tahara, but because water moves us, can carry us from one place to another, Jewish wisdom in water and how water can prepare us to wash things away, to prepare us for next stages, to bridge us between chapters. And the other one's a really personal one, but I want to share it because I love it. It's a tradition that I have with my partner, Ari, whenever we enter into a new chapter, whether that's like an anniversary or a new job, is we do a post-mortem. And I'm realizing now the amazing Hunnery and theme in my life. But we stop and we reflect out loud, usually with a good meal and a drink or two, about what came before. And we really kind of do this full review of like what were the highs and what were the lows, kind of like how people do for at the end of the week, maybe Shabbat dinner, when you go around your table with your family or people you love. But it's, I think, a really, I love this tradition because it allows us to really break things down and to pause and to reflect on things that weren't just challenging or stood out as hard moments, but to celebrate, which we often don't get to do or choose not to.
I love that. As somebody who does that on a regular basis with Gabe, it's really meaningful to be able to kind of talk through something and then go, okay, well, what'd you learn from it? What was challenging? What can you do next? And so I really appreciate you sharing that personal tradition with us. Gabe, what have you to say, my friend?
You know, for a really long time, I had a habit of like kind of burning bridges when I knew I was at the end of something, when I knew that I was, you know, leaving even like a grade or a class. I kind of ended friendships and I ended relationships that I had with people because it was easier to kind of let that end than to kind of say goodbye. And as it turns out, that was actually not correct. While it might be harder in the short term to reframe relationships and to reframe friendships and, you know, the ways in which you interact with people, redefine relationships with people, giving up altogether ends up being a lot harder and a lot lonelier of a transition. So I'd say, you know, you might not be holding on to the time, you might not be holding on to the chapter, but make sure you're holding on to the people around you.
Beautiful. Edan.
It's really important to give the past and the time that you're leaving the respect it deserves. And, you know, just because you're moving on from it doesn't mean that the time you spent then has to be forgotten. It was a time you lived. And so I think that giving it the respect it deserves and remembering the moments that were the most special and stepping forward into the next part of your life, I think is nice.
So I actually want to build off that, Edan, because I agree with you. So I also have a private practice that I think I've talked about on this podcast before, but I can't remember, which is that every Yom Kippur, I decide that either I'm going to let something go or I'm going to walk away. And that might be with people who don't serve me well. It might be with bad thinking. It might be with somebody who upset me. It might be a difficult situation. But I choose every year, at least at one point in the year, to say, like, you know what? We're not carrying this with us. We're going to let this be here. We're going to let this stay here. Or we're going to be an active participant in shaping the life that we want to live. And we're going to walk away from people or things that do not serve us anymore. And I have to tell you, Edan, you know, I have walked away from relationships that don't serve me anymore. And I still hold on to the meaningful parts of those relationships that shaped me into the person I am today. I just don't allow them to influence the way that I think or act anymore in a way that I used to. And I think that that can be really powerful and graceful. But one of the things that I will say is no is a complete sentence. You don't always need to explain your choices. Certainly, Jacob did not necessarily explain his choices. He just said, hey, bury me in Hebron. Do it. I want to, you know, like, I want to be with my family. You know, Joseph went down, as I said, with a whole Egyptian entourage. And I think that being able to be secure in who you are and the decisions you make help you have more confidence in closing the door. You don't need to lock it, but it's okay sometimes, I think, for you to close it. All of which are really meaningful conversations. And of course, I feel like I'm doorknobbing. I'm sorry to make a door joke, but like, it does feel like that a little bit. But sorry, if people want to continue the conversation with you, if they want access to this education and resources and support for Jewish end-of-life care, how can they best find or follow you?
The best way is via our website, which is at Kavod, KavodVnichum.org, KavodVnichum.org.
Amazing. I am really excited to share that in the show notes. So for those people who may not be quick writers like me, I'm not a particularly fast writer when I'm listening, Don't worry, we'll have it in the show notes for you. We're really excited for people to learn a little bit more about this. Sarit, any last words, thoughts, concerns, or jokes that you want to share before we head off?
Okay. It's not really a good joke. It's a bit of a joke. It's a Jewish joke. So there's this tradition. I need to share this because I think it's hysterical and also really cool. Zion Adar, the 7th of the month of Adar. Do you know why it's an important day off the top of your head? Traditionally, it is the day that we talk about that is Moses's birthday and also his day of death. And it is the day that many Chevra Kedisha gather to reflect on their past year, to come together. Often there's a fast day, a big feast. They will reflect on the work that they've done as a community because God buried Moses. So the Chevra Kedisha had the day off.
Nice. I like that.
Beautiful. Thank you for your teaching. Thank you for your humor. And thank you for your candor, Sari. It was really wonderful to be able to hear about these things in a way that just, it's not so scary, you know? And I really appreciate that as somebody who used to be very, very afraid of cemeteries and death and working to get past that. Thank you so much, Gabe, for your incredible rundown and also your wonderful Midrashic mixology. Thank you to Idan for hopping on this episode, even during your vacation. How incredible you are. And thank you to our editors, Mike and Kate, who always make sure that these episodes come out so beautifully. And to our listeners, where would we be without you? Well, probably not making podcasts. So stay tuned. We'll be with you, bringing your conclusion. And again, before we get there, a quick Happy New Year and Chazak Chazak Venid Chazik. It's been a pleasure. You know, Gabe, this was really powerful for me, especially because I've lost people in my life that have been close to me. I've lost students. I've had people pass away unexpectedly. And I think that I've always had a tinge of fear around death and what comes with death. And this idea of shmirat doesn't bother me as much, like, you know, being able to stay with a body potentially. But the idea of touching it seemed almost taboo, right? Almost like, how could I possibly be a part of doing something like that? And I really so appreciated how Sarit made it tangible, made it feel like this is actually a gift, not only for the person that you're serving, but also for yourself. Because you don't get thanks from it. You just get the knowledge that you've done something that is irreplaceable and will go into eternity and end somebody's chapter gracefully and meaningfully. And that's really powerful.
What strikes me about the power of this Torah portion is that we're wrapping up the book of Genesis and we're tying a nice bow on it. And as I said in the introduction, like, yeah, we're setting us up for what happens next, but we're tying a bow on it. Jacob dies, the last of our, you know, big three patriarchs, and we're kind of summarizing everything that happened. We're getting the kind of story of, you know, here's how we got here. But we do also kind of get a reminder of, and stuff's going to happen next. We get the, and we're all in Egypt, but we also get in Jacob's blessing to Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, he says, Yivarech et ha-narim ve-yikare vahem shimi v'shem avotai Avraham v'Yitzchak, which means bless the children, bless these boys, and through them may my name be called and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac. Now, these boys never met Isaac, and they certainly didn't meet Abraham, but we understand through this blessing, through this like half verse of Torah, that all of us receive that inheritance. And so it just reminds me, it's ringing in my ears, this idea of like, may they be a blessing for you. When somebody dies, we say, you know, may their memory be for a blessing. And I just can't help but think, wow, the memory of this whole lineage all the way up to Ephraim and Manasseh, it's still a blessing to us today. And so with that, you know, chazak, chazak v'nit chazek, also chazak ve'ematz, may it bring us strength, may it bring us courage, and may it bring us some comfort. And of course, as always, l'chaim.
L'chaim. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sarit Vishnevsky, and you're listening to Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist. And this is the end of Bereshit and the episode.